You're listening to Awake, a men's podcast by Fellowship Bible Church. Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Awake podcast. We are super excited to be back with you as we have just concluded our Awake study for the winter season. And it was a great time, had a ton of good guys come out and to dive into several different really significant topics on what it looks like to navigate out of darkness and into light. And so it was just a great time at our tables, great conversation. I'm looking forward to how those conversations will continue through podcast discussions. So we're excited that you guys are tuning into this to continue growing with your brothers, growing in your relationship with God. But as always, I'm joined by Sean Leary. Sean, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Liam. How are you?
Good. It's good. It's good to have you back. It's good to be back together.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise, just loved Awake series and what was going on with that and the momentum. And then our third guest on the podcast is Mr. John Hickel. John, good to have you. Thanks for being here.
You bet. Thanks for inviting me to this. I'm excited to be a part of it and have a conversation about kind of what we've been through these last 8 weeks or so.
Yeah, awesome. You've kind of been through it through the since the beginning. And for some of you, those that don't know, that John taught last session, previous to this one, that was maybe your first time teaching in Awake, and then taught this session. So we're excited to ask you a couple more questions about, you know, how God was moving through you on that. But if you want to take a minute and just kind of introduce yourself to some of the listeners that don't know you, kind of who you are, what do you do, your family, your wife, your sports, your FBC involvement. Kind of just a little elevator pitch.
Sure. I appreciate that. I've grew up in Kansas, so Central Kansas boy, and went to Kansas State University. That's where I met my wife of 34 years now.
Nice. Congratulations.
Awesome. Yep. We have four adult sons, 25, 27, 28, 29. No, that's not right. Somewhere in there.
They'll correct you in the comments.
It'll be corrected. 25, 26, 27, and 29, I think. So, but anyway.
That'll change next year probably, right?
Give it a couple of months. Four adult children, three of them are married. So I've got some wonderful daughter-in-laws today and two grandkids, 7 months and 8 months. So the family's expanding, and we've been coming to FBC. I think we started when my oldest was in sixth grade. We came to FBC, and, you know, it was a growing, vibrant church there. But kind of what did it for us was, you know, you always hear about being intentional, doing life with people and things like that. And when we walked into the doors to visit one time, I saw teachers, I saw our kids' classmates, I saw their basketball teammates, I saw their soccer teammates. I saw people that we saw throughout the week. Mm-hmm. They were here. And so that really hit home that we want to be a part of a church where it's not just you see people on Sundays, but you see them kind of throughout the week as well. Mm-hmm. And it's been great getting our kids to go through the mountain. Most of them were able to go through that and just grow up. And today they're all involved in other churches right now. So it's kind of cool to see that and see them kind of develop their own faith and, you know, go about raising their own families. And it's neat to see that, be a parent and watch that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I'm just a little curious too. Like, can you share a little bit about your experience with men's ministry kind of throughout FBC?
Yeah. Well, men's ministry has always been strong for me, been a part of my life, even before FBC, before coming here. But, you know, it's at FBC, it seems like it's kind of ebbs and flows. You know, you have some times where there's not a lot going on, not a lot of momentum. And sometimes, like, we're coming out of Awake with, you know, 130 guys at the Awake series. And I think we've got really, really strong momentum. And I'm excited about where that's going. Prior to COVID, I came alongside David for a little while and we tried to get some things going. And I think we started to have some good momentum and then COVID hit and then the bottom fell out. And I think guys today need it more, you know, need this companionship, need this other guys to come alongside them more than ever before, just the pressures and strains that they're under. And, you know, I love being a part of that because I think that again, having those friendships, guys that are ahead of you, guys that are behind you, guys that come alongside you is critical. And guys, you know, navigating their faith, navigating their families and that today, it's really needed.
Yeah.
So that kind of transitions a little bit to you taught. You know, last session was your first time teaching. Mm-hmm. So what led you to what, you know, the Spirit leading you to want to teach? Have you done any teaching previously, like outside of men's ministry, or how did that evolve?
I have, I've done that in the past in previous churches, taught classes. My wife and I were, we kind of led a young couples back when we were young couples. We you know, led a young couples group and we've navigated through that and, did early on at FBC, we were here and I team taught with a gentleman, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, but we went through a couple of classes together and team taught a couple of classes mm-hmm. together. And so it's been kind of part of my history. Mm-hmm. And then it just happened when Liam approached me, 6 months or so ago, to teach that part of that Awake series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what were your two topics then this series? Because you team taught, right? You taught
yes.
twice this series,
yeah.
right?
So this time I was able to, I was paired up with Joe, so was able to teach with him, and we split up the lessons. But our topics were shame and ambition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shame, I kind of knew that, you know, from past history, that was relevant for me. Ambition was a little bit different mm-hmm. because I hadn't really ever thought about that and the mm-hmm. challenges in that. And that, I think, probably resonated more with me today in where I'm at today, whereas shame, I could really relate to that from my mm-hmm. past mm-hmm. And where things are going. So Joe and I both were able to team teach those two lessons this time.
And I think that was something that I found cool and interesting about the six topics that we covered is that some of them were not things that I would like naturally be thinking about mm-hmm. as a man. I don't know if I would have been able to put a lot of language to despair or to mm-hmm. ambition, futility, those kinds of things that are not like super common things that guys really talk about. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was great that you guys gave voice to that, specifically on the topics of shame and ambition and just, yeah, brought the word. Led to good conversations around the tables.
Yeah, I heard that a couple of times from the teachers. Like, well, you, Zach, and now you, was that the theme that you were teaching on was something that was uncomfortable, that taught you more about it, mm-hmm. you know, that than you ever have. So that's really awesome to hear. Just kind of peeling the curtain back, my, you know, curiosity question is, how was it working with Joe, you know, seeing him kind of dive into scripture and kind of show you, okay, here's kind of how, you know, by osmosis, I guess, like this mm-hmm. is how he teaches the church a little bit. Did you get a little bit of that, you know, a little bit?
A little bit. It was really interesting because, again, he's a strong leader and he has, you know, he has his way of doing things and he jumps in. And I'm kind of that same way. I don't wait for people to say, this is what you need to do. I just jump in and do it. Mm-hmm. And so the first one, we jumped in and it was a good conversation about what we thought and where we should take this. And it was natural. And it came out, okay, I'm going to do this and I'll talk about this part. Then you come in and you talk about this. Very easy and mm-hmm. very natural. We walked through it. The second time, we really didn't have to meet. It's just mm-hmm. we talked about it one time and it's like, okay, I've got this, you got this. And then we met after we had all the information put together, we put it in and it flowed very, I think, very well. Yeah, so it was good. It was good working with him and good experience there. Mm-hmm. And just, again, wealth of knowledge and any chance I can get to learn from people like that, I mm-hmm. want to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool experience to get to work through teaching with somebody that might think differently or plan differently or prepare differently mm-hmm. or just has a different life experience too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty cool. Do you have now that you've done kind of two different ways, which did you like better? Doing it solo, doing it as a team? This is more just me from a men's ministry perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wondering, what do you think?
Sure. I like the team approach because it really, even though I took ownership of my part and mm-hmm. developed a message around my part. It was it's as long as you can work out the flow. Yeah. So it's natural. It worked well that we could, the topics that we discussed and the stories that we would tell, you know, we just kind of played off each other and it mm-hmm. worked. I thought that one worked well.
Yeah,
really
I thought
well.
It did too.
Absolutely. No, yeah. I really thought your strides, this is just me personally, from this second session, mm-hmm. just you were firing off and confident. I just feel like, I don't know, I was just relating to a lot of what you said. And maybe it was that the topic, you know, of the one on shame, where I had a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. similar to you, have a lot of stuff in the past where that would just weigh me down, and that shame versus guilt, mm-hmm. right? And what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And so that was an, you know, I'd take those lessons today. But one of the things I kind of keep thinking about is your one on ambition. Right. And I really didn't ask you about your job, but right there at the beginning of the podcast, you opened up with a bunch of really impressive things, right? Your marriage, your K-State, your kids, how awesome they're doing. That seems like that was a lot of ambition that mm-hmm. was just kind of driven you onto that. So what was, you know, for some of the listeners maybe that didn't get to listen to that ambition talk, what were some of like the key themes that say like, okay, this is how you kind of shift this perspective? Because you said you're kind of living in that maybe right now. A little bit.
That the ambition was really good in for me, because it really brought, again, it's not something you normally think about. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, we were able to get to some of that, but there's also some things that we really didn't even touch on that I think is still, you know, a challenge for guys. But the point of the, you know, the ambition talk was that there's really two types. There's godly ambition, and there's worldly ambition. And the worldly ambition is about us, and it's about us being the best. It's about us, personally selfish, for selfish reasons. Whereas the worldly ambition is really changing that perspective about, I'm doing this, you know, for God's purposes. I'm doing the thing that He calls me to do, and I'm doing it well. And the examples that we had, Joe talked about King Uzziah, who started off really strong, achieved greatness there in God's eyes, but then turned that back on himself and became very selfish and you know, triumphed to tragedy, as Joe said. Mine was on Paul, where it was kind of the opposite. And Paul was ambitious throughout, but it was misguided mm-hmm. at the beginning, you know, and he was doing things what he thought was right and what he thought he should be doing. But it, in the end, you know, like Jesus said, Paul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Paul was going after it the wrong way. And that was that change in perspective, that transformation that we had. And I think we all need to go through that. We all need to have that transformation, because what that does is it changes our perspective mm-hmm. and what is important to us. Because in the world's eyes and what we hear out there, it's my job, it's my status, my business, how big is my business and how many employees do I have, and you know, how successful, what kind of house and what kind of cars. I mean, it just piles on. And with that comes all kinds of pressure and just a wake of turmoil in your relationships, and really seeing our lives for what it should be, and seeing the value that's ahead of us. You know, in Hebrews 12:2, that, you know, Jesus did this for the joy that's set before him. Mm-hmm. He took on the cross for the joy that he saw. And I think that's the, you know, that's that attitude that I think as men we need to be focused on, and not get caught up in what the world says we need to be caught up on. So yeah. It was really good for me to kind of see that. And I've kind of gone through that in my life as well, with my jobs and just raising the family and just trying to stay focused on what's important. Mm-hmm.
So was there anything on the shame topic then that you were hoping that guys would walk away with, similarly mm-hmm. to that kind of point on the ambition topic?
Yeah, yes. And it's what I learned years ago, and it's grace. It's the importance of grace. Because too often that shame is just a cycle that we repeat over and over and over again. It's about performance, about doing our best and trying our hardest, and then we fail, and then we feel shame, and then we get stuck in shame, and it's like, okay, I got this, I can try it, I can do it, I can work harder, and I try again, and I fail, and I feel shame, and too often we get stuck in that. And the only thing that we can do to get out of that cycle is grace, by realizing what, you know, what God did for us and you know, the grace that He's given us. And then we can step out of that. We don't have to go through that. It's not about me, and it's not about my performance and what I can do, because God's already done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Identifying with that shame, it's just like shame can honestly make you feel like numb at that point. It's just like you rinse, repeat. And then like the shame that you feel, it's like, well, I've felt this before. I kind of know these mm-hmm. kind of bad feelings. It's just a vicious cycle. And I remember, yeah, with mine, that it wasn't until you're right on it, that the gift of God smacked me in the face and said, I've already done this. I've mm-hmm. already gave everything for you. Why do you not get that? Why do you try to do everything on your own? Okay, never mind. I get this. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I wake up crying, sweating. I get this. give it all to Jesus on that. You know what I mean?
And I know sometimes as a teacher, we get hit by the topics a little bit more in the preparation or in the delivery of them. So I'm just curious from that perspective, how did you see God working in you on the topics of shame and ambition as you were in prep? And then kind of since then, have you seen him continue to work in that?
Oh, always. And sometimes right before I say, yes, I'll do it. And and I know what the topic is, he gets me on it. And that was that way, the previous Awake study and even this one. And it's just, you know, shame, part of shame, you know, shame is not natural. That wasn't part of God's design. Mm. It came into the world when sin came into the world. And that's when shame entered. And it's you know, Satan puts that in front of us and tries to block us from, you know, from being the light, getting out of the shadows and into the light. And, you know, part of that shame, it's, you know, how did we learn it? How did we see that in our lives growing up? And then how do we use it today? That was part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. And shame is kind of the easy button. If we want to raise kids, we can do it in a negative way mm-hmm. by using shame. Or if we want our spouses to do a certain, you know, act a certain way, we can use shame to try to do that. Mm-hmm. And I saw that, passively in some cases, sometimes actively, really using shame to do that. And maybe just a bit of sarcasm, you know, in your marriage and how you respond to your wife, you know, when it's not in a loving way, but you can put a little dig in there, but it's shame. You're really trying to use that because, again, that's typically what we learn growing up. We see a lot of that and we see a lot of shame in the world. And again, that's where Satan really pushes us. To use that. So I saw that in just how I was talking to Janelle, how I was responding to her sometimes and just, you know, using shame a little bit, try to get my way, to get my point across.
And I think sometimes even when you do your best to try and convey like correction, it can still be heard and received as shame. Mm-hmm. Even when you're not trying to convey that at all, like, hey, you did something wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong, but we just have such a hard time receiving, I think, even good criticism, mm-hmm. good rebuke, good challenge, mm-hmm. and not seeing that as an indictment on who we are as a person or changing our identity. So I think that was kind of one of the things that I've been processing post the shame mm-hmm. talk is how often am I responding with a reflex of shame when that's not the intention that person was trying to give me, mm-hmm. if there was any kind of correction or feedback. So I resonate with what you're talking about there.
I mean, maybe that's a conversation for another day, but that just makes me think, okay, well, what are possible solutions to somebody not always reacting in defense or positive mm-hmm. criticism? How do we shift back to a heart or a brain posture of like, your brother or sister or coworker or somebody is just here to help. And we're talking about positive criticism, let alone just neutral criticism, mm-hmm. right, on something like that. So I don't know. What are your thoughts as you've...
Yeah, I think for me, it's been, I am not writing a narrative about their intentions. When they're coming to me with feedback, I'm not, unless I ask like, hey, why did you say this? Or what are you trying to do in this situation? My default is to write a story that they don't like me or, you know, they don't like what I did. And so they just don't like me as a person. That's the like the quick reaction. Mm-hmm. And instead, I'm trying to think more through. It's like, okay, I can hear that somebody like for me, I can hear that somebody didn't like something that I said in a teaching or the way that I did something in a work setting. I'm going to choose to hear that as they want me to get better. They don't think that I'm a bad person. Mm. And so I think that's kind of the shift. But honestly, there are times that people think you're a bad person and they might say that too. That's probably less common. Yeah. And I think that those comments are actually easier to just let go and mm-hmm. not let them become mm-hmm. a piece of shame for us. It's usually when the people that we value their opinion say things about us that they can become more internalized shame.
That's the underlying aspect of shame. It's, it's me as a person, you know, shame. When I have shame, it's like, I am a bad person, not what I did was wrong, which is guilt.
Yeah.
It's I'm a bad person. Mm. You know, I'm stuck in this repeated sin, whatever. How can God love me? You know, I'm just that bad person. Mm. And in the same respect with kind of what you said with, you know, taking criticism, My wife and I have gone through a book study, Love and Respect from Eggerichs. Really, really good study. But the gist of that is you got to trust in the goodwill of your mate, of your spouse. Mm-hmm. Trust in their goodwill. So if something comes off that I take as criticism, stop and say, hey, how did you mean that? Because that really hurt. That really came across. And as a guy, it's like, it's a lot easier for me to just throw a dig, throw something back at her, than stop and pause and say, you know, what did you really mean by that? Mm-hmm. And it just, you got to trust in the goodwill of that person and, you know, believe that they've got your best in mind.
Yeah. And I think that is true even when we feel like the repercussions of sin in our relationship with the Lord. I think that we can really easily think that God is now angry against us and has ill will towards us. And so in the same way, because of Jesus, we can trust in the goodwill of God and not have to assume that he is against us as an enemy, but he is actually loving us because of Jesus. So I love that point. I think that's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about like ambition. How have you been kind of processing that, or in what ways was that impactful for you personally?
So there's two sides to that. An ambition that we talked about, the worldly versus godly ambition, and just changing your perspective and seeing the couple of images that I threw out there. Was one was that of a diamond, and seeing that something that's of much greater worth than what we're holding on to, or being a part of a production. Do I want to have my own little back alley production and be the starring role in that, or do I want to play a part in God's masterpiece? And it's just changing that perspective on that. And just making sure that we're aligned with God's, with God's will and God's values there. The part that we didn't really get to talk about that I think is a struggle for a lot of guys is the tension between what we are called to be as Christians, husbands, fathers, that, and what the world wants us to be and be successful. We've got to provide for our families. That's number one. But I don't want to do it at the expense of alienating my kids or, overrunning my wife or anything like that. It's got to be both. And so there's a constant, a constant tension for that ambition. And again, it's church, it's work, it's kids, it's spouse, it's all these things that are constantly vying for our attention. And if we're not careful, if we don't control that, we can overrun, all of those relationships and be in trouble and all of those. And that was one that kind of resonated with me, is that constant struggle that I've got to be a good father and a good husband, but I also have to be a good provider. And how do I balance that out? Because I could easily pour myself into work. And I know guys that have done that and friends that have done that, and they're very successful, very successful, but their family is over here just reeling from, just not having the father, present.
And they might be going into that work with the intentions of, I want to give my family everything that they could want. And so there might be even underneath that, honorable intentions that are playing out in a not good way that kind of puts work then on the right.
Yeah.
Well,
as you had said, it was a misaligned ambition, right? With Paul, that same idea.
Yeah.
These guys don't know exactly what they're, but.
Yeah. And that's been, as I look back over my career and family and that, there was a time probably in the late 30s, early 40s, where I could have chosen to push to go into work into that and be less present at home, but be more successful at work. Mm-hmm. And I had that opportunity to do that and kind of pulled back and instead stayed in a job that gave me more freedom, more flexibility, not as much potential, but I was there with my kids. I was able to coach them through their basketball and their soccer and in different sports and be present in their lives instead of, climbing the ladder, climbing the corporate ladder. And then as they, once they kind of got into when the youngest was in high school, then I made a transition in my work and was able to really pursue that a little bit more at that time. But there was a point where I had to back off. And when I did that, that was a struggle because, again, providing became a struggle. And, you know, you're trying to feed four boys, the grocery bill that came up, you know, with that, you know, almost needed a second job just to just to pay for the milk and the, you know, the eggs and the bread that we had to provide. So, you know, it's just that struggle. And I think a lot of guys, especially, you know, guys your age, young families and things like that, there's always going to be that tension. And I don't think that tension is a bad thing, but I think that tension is something we have to really manage, you know, and monitor that.
When you were going through that that decision to pull back a little bit, do you remember like seeking counsel? I know it's obviously 5, 10, 8, 10 years ago. Do you remember seeking counsel? Do you remember like what that kind of process looked through? Because I've kind of gone through something similar when trying to find a way to pull back income, pull back hours, spend more time with my family, right? I'm, you know, young 30s, so a young family, but I feel like our generation kind of is like, all right, how do I go get it? But then also don't leave my, you know, wife as a single mother, just kind of, hey, look at everything that I got for us. And she's exhausted on the floor. It's just like, oh, well, I just killed this deer. It's time for you to cook the dinner now. You know, look what I just did. So that idea that plays out in our mind as mittens, you know, look at everything that I just did at work. You come, you come home and play it out. So anyway, long story. Did you seek counsel? Yeah. How did that play out?
I think today you guys have so much, so many more resources, I think. And a big part of that is having a healthy church and a healthy men's ministry. I think that's key to this. And I wouldn't, you know, I had some of that, but not to the extent that you guys do. And thank you for 10 or 15 years ago, but we're probably talking 25 years ago. You know, having good guys around you, I think, is key. And I've been fortunate. There's guys that that I may meet with, you know, today that I've met with, you know, 20, 25 years ago. We're same age. We've, you know, our kids are the same age. And we've gone through this, you know, process together and kind of navigated through this together. So having a good group of guys, I think, is key on that to kind of hold you accountable and really help you course correct. You know, I'm spending too much time at work and I need somebody to call me out on that. Sometimes it's my wife. It can be something that happens with the kids, but it causes me to, you know, recalibrate, get back on track so I don't get too far off course.
Yeah, I think that's important for guys to have in mind too. And I just saw so much of a connection between ambition and the futility talk and just how easy it is for me to go from a place of, okay, well, if my ambition is wrongly directed in this way, well, then it's just going to lead to me feeling futility in that direction rather than just aligning my ambitions in the right direction towards God and then towards the responsibilities that he's given us in our lives. So,
yeah, the book, you know, the Fighting Shadows book was, like I say, it was a great book and great resource through this. And I could relate to so many different areas in it. But, you know, it say, you know, we can step out of the shadows into the light. That's what we should do. But it too often it's too easy to either become passive, to medicate, and that could be drugs or alcohol, but it could be, you know, could be video games. It could be whatever. I pour myself into that and just numb myself from that challenge. There's a section in the book that I thought just resonated, and I think where we as a church and even men's ministry, what we need to consider, and it's talking about what guys are learning today, and you know, it talks about, you know, what about the church? And I'll just read a paragraph here. It says, unfortunately, much of what is taught at church about masculinity is so theoretical, and it doesn't seem to work in real life. There are a multitude of expectations that we simply cannot live up to. We're supposed to be leaders and servants, strong and sensitive, healthy and whole. We are meant to be emotionally available, sexually restrained, biblically literate, and theologically informed. That's the pressure that I think some guys feel today, and that's that tension. And we have to offer grace in that, but also a path to where they can feel like they're not failing at any one of those areas, that they can be successful and give them the tools to be successful there.
Yeah, and I think that's what I love and have loved experiencing in the Awake study is that I see it as a pathway to how do you have those kinds of conversations? How do we begin to process what it looks like to embody everything that God intends for us to embody as men after his own heart? Because that's what we're all after. We want to be men that look like Jesus and love like Jesus and serve like Jesus. And that is a high, high bar. It's a high calling. And I think the world needs more men that look like Jesus. And so that's been my passion and what I've loved to get to be a part of. And I've appreciated that you guys have been willing to be a part of that as well.
You're doing a good job, and I'm looking forward to kind of how we continue this.
Yeah,
it's been
absolutely
great.
So do you have any final thoughts or hopes for the guys as we kind of go into this next season of waiting in between studies? What would be an encouragement that you would give to guys during this kind of season of time?
Well, I think there's two components to kind of that man-to-man relationship. And one is that face-to-face where we can really speak into the lives of guys. And they need that. I need that. Mm-hmm. I need somebody to sit across me and say, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, wake up. I need somebody that can challenge me on that. But in order to get to that point with guys, you have to do the shoulder-to-shoulder. You have to just be available, just whatever it is. It doesn't have to be anything special, but you need to have that relationship, that shoulder-to-shoulder relationship before you have the right to speak into them face-to-face. And I think men's ministry does a good job of kind of both of that, both of those things, providing the activities, whether it's golf or whatever the activities are, where guys can come and develop the relationship shoulder-to-shoulder so that in these small group studies, in the awake and kind of the follow-up to the awake, they have the opportunity to sit face-to-face and do that. And I just challenge guys, you know, just to invite others into that environment. That's kind of what I was able to do with it, awake. Just, hey, I see somebody, God lays them on my heart, invite them in. And don't answer for them. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, they're too busy, they won't do it. Don't do that. Do what the Spirit calls you to do and ask them and invite them in and let the Holy Spirit work on them to get them to that point. I think that's our role as men and to just invite others into this circle and come alongside them and have those relationships.
Yeah. And it just reminds me of what Greg said at the start of the Awake study, that the cure for loneliness or disconnection is invitation and accepting invitations. Mm-hmm. And I think that all we can do is put the invitation out there.
Agreed.
And see who says yes. So, yeah, John, thank you so much for your willingness to invest in guys in this church and to share from your heart on these topics over the last study and the way that you do that continually with the group of guys that you're walking alongside with at your table as well. You've been doing that for years. Yep. And I'm just excited to see, as you even bring new guys in, as you meet them and interact with them through the church services, you embody a lot of what we desire for men at FBC. So grateful to get to do ministry and life with you. Thank you for being on the Awake podcast.
I'm honored. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. And guys, we are coming up, like I said, on just kind of a new season for men's ministry as we kind of look into the summer months. We have a few things that are coming up that I just want to let you guys know about at the kind of the end of our episode here. First one in the beginning of May is we have our father-son camp out. Just a great time for dads and their sons to connect and build relationships around the campfire, fishing, throwing the football around, eating a lot of hot dogs and s'mores, and we want to have you join us for that. So keep an eye out on the website and on your emails for information regarding the father-son camp out. And we are also bringing back our men's summer golf nights on the first and third Mondays starting in May, and we'll go June, July, and August for that as well. We'll be at Western Hills, and you'll be able to find more information on the website in the coming weeks as well. But we hope that you'll say yes to these shoulder-to-shoulder activities, mm-hmm. that they would be a space where you can be intentional with your boys, to build relationships, to facilitate even better conversations moving forward. Because that's our heart and our desire for you guys as men, to grow in your relationship with God as you grow in relationship with your brothers. So thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Awake Podcast, and we will see you next time.